There are still certain streets in Milan, like Via Carlo Porta, that seem to appear and disappear. They are there, yet they are not there. You walk by without even seeing them. A young woman looking for a job arrived here one morning in 1970. She came from Vanzaghello, between Busto Arsizio and the Ticino. Her name was Onorina, and she wasn't sure how to address you, intimidated by your presence. You are looking for a secretary, Ernesto, someone to oversee your infinite everyday affairs. Onorina knew you well, was closely acquainted with your family, which back in town had given employment to entire generations of her neighbours. One phrase you uttered was enough to get over her shyness. Here, there are no counts, no countesses, you said, smiling. It was her birthday. She worked with you to the very end. She knew your fixation, your rhythms, your schedule, the passion for order, precision, the everyday rituals, your morning appointments, the painting, every day, right to the last day. Afternoon tea, all the cake you put out for her every day when she came to work. You were concerned when she was late, for which the Northern Rail lines were to blame, and you always wanted to make sure she set off on time for the commute home. You were like that. You cared about everyone, loved everyone, sharing their sorrows and passions. It was almost as if you wanted to atone for belonging to such an important family. Your mother Julia, with whom you were very close, was a marquise from Genoa, while your father was a captain of industry who had made his fortune in textiles and acquired the Cotonificio Valle Ticino in Vanzaghello, as we were saying, where you grew up in the big Liberty Villa and you were referred to by the servants as Il Contino, listening to the sound of the sirens of the factories of your father from beyond the walls of the town. You spend your whole life trying to knock down those walls, to eliminate barriers of class, of status, to share the love of life and art with all. Maybe you were also trying to prove that you were better than such an extraordinary, cumbersome father, one who was capable of linking his surname, your surname, to the first encyclopedia ever made in Italy, the Treccani. A tycoon and a philanthropist, appointed senator in 1924 and granted the title of count in 1937. Judicious and moderate, generous too. After you graduated from classical high school, not yet 18, he helped you to start a magazine. Too much for anyone. The gossip mongers of the time said young men at that age wanted a motor scooter, not the helm of a magazine. Maybe they thought you were spoiled, but they were wrong. That corrente di vita giovanile was indeed the dream of a young man, but it also brought some fresh air that was lacking on the suffocating scene of a regime that was increasingly closed, violent and racist. That is the age for doing crazy things, Ernesto. Things that change your whole existence. You decide who you are, who you will be, for good. You had promised your parents to study engineering, but even your father had understood and accepted that you wanted to live through art, culture and painting. What worried him was your political passion, your increasingly evident, embarrassing, dangerous for your safety, antifascism. Years later, Gianni Rodari remarked to the woman who was to become your wife that, when Corrente arrived, for us, young people of the province, it was a major event. It took a youth to have such courage. In Milan, with your family, you lived at Via Montebello 32, in the big villa that after the war, one of your brothers, who cared more than you did about the title of count, managed to demolish to promote a very profitable real estate operation, in the heart of a city that was changing its skin for the umpteenth time. The editorial offices of the magazine were in your house, and you were its editorial staff. How long did the Corrente experience last? A very short time, but it was amazingly fertile, the milestone that oriented your entire existence. Those were the years in which you wrote experimental texts for Giorgio Strehler and Paolo Grassi, and texts performed by Franco Parenti at the Sala San Martini. Years when you learned to paint from Bruno Cassinari and to manage a magazine whose contributors were artists, philosophers, poets, often some mere years senior. Luciano Anceschi, Carlo Bo, Renato Birolli, Antonio Banfi. Then there were the exhibitions of paintings at the Permanente or the Galleria Grande on Via Dante, with Carlo Carrà, Giacomo Manzù, Renato Guttuso, Mario Maffai. The list of collaborations was very long, long enough to quicken the pulse. You, a tall, slim youth, not yet 20, were learning by doing. Vittorio Sereni always acknowledged this virtue of yours, the habit of shared work and absolute dedication to it. Art, life, society, politics were all one and the same thing for you, as was love. You met Lydia because you knew her brother, Raffaellino de Grada. Your friend and collaborator, arrested the first time by the regime in 1938 and then again imprisoned for the strikes organized at Pirelli in 43. In those years, your magazine had been banned by the police, but during the war you continued to publish in the Edizione di Corrente, the poems of Vittorio Sereni, the translations of Greek lyric poetry by Salvatore Quasimodo, the theatre pieces of Beniamino Joppolo, the photographs of Alberto Latuada. And you continued your anti-fascist activism, organizing secret meetings and distributing flyers around the city. On a day of leave from the front, Cassinari organized a party in his studio on Via San Tommaso. You were young. Things got wild, with Giorgio Labò, who died at partisan a few years later, walking on the roof cornice, and Giuseppe Migneco so drunk he fell asleep on the jump seat outside the door. You, instead, spent the whole evening talking with Lydia about war, peace, painting, art, life. You never parted after that. You made love for the first time on the hard floor of the Corrente Gallery. After the fall of Mussolini, your studio became the underground office of Unità. You were arrested, and it took your father and all his connections to get you out. You fled to Switzerland with Lydia pregnant, without papers. There you helped to move weapons over the border for the resistance. Everything that happened after the end of the war, for you, was the result of your youth, your 20 years lived without posing, without a break. You believed in the duty of political activism and sought out your role in society as an intellectual and as an artist, without allowing the former to get the upper hand over the latter. Do you remember, Ernesto, that discussion at your house on Via Borgonovo? Fabrizio Onofri, introduced to you by Antonello Trombadori, said that intellectuals should devote themselves completely to the party, since only in this way could they truly be part of the working class. You and Alfonso Gatto, on the other hand, thought intellectuals should write, paint, do their work without constraints, and then take part in politics as citizens. Gatto was so angry, he yelled all evening. Your character was different, and after 11 you sent the guests home, because in the morning you always rose at the same hour as the workers. You were everywhere for life, for reality, Ernesto. You knew and took part in the sufferings of what was still a cruelly feudal southern Italy. You became a member of the city council of Melissa in Calabria to help the peasants that had occupied abandoned land. You travelled. You loved Paris, Moscow, London, Havana. But you always knew you were a Lombard painter. Your skies remained those of Manzoni, which are so beautiful when they are beautiful. You roamed around Milan, photographing it foot by foot, from the ruins of Porta Volta, still gutted by bombs, to the balconies of the buildings in the canal zone. "I will paint my city as long as I live," you said. You saw it change so quickly that it seemed as if you were trying to capture its memory on canvas. the factories of Via Palizzi before Quartoggiaro was even built, the traffic on the Ponte della Ghisolfa, the same traffic shown by Luchino Visconti in Rocco e Suoi Fratelli, noble like you and a communist like you. You sought life in those places, the people, seen as an infinite narrative of stories, of humanity, not as a formless mass. When the bomb exploded at Piazza Fontana, you felt the need to shout it. You, a firm pacifist in a period of desperate violence, composed of resurgences of fascism, almost as if the sacrifice of your young comrades just one generation ago had been totally useless. It took you 6 years to paint Un Popolo di Volti. It was precisely during that period that Onorina came to work with you. Day by day, she saw the cathedral, the square, the city vanish from your sketches, giving way on that immense canvas to the faces of the people of Milan. The infinite array of persons on hand at the funeral of the victims of the massacre. Milan, the city I love, more than in its buildings, exists in its people, you wanted to tell us. It was necessary to come to grips with reality and to paint what you love, you said. Life was not a sin from which to seek redemption through art. The labor of the artist is the same as that of any other man. Effort and joy to be shared under the same sky of Lombardy. That human sky you wanted to donate to your city when, in the hedonistic, ambitious 1980s, you transformed the facade of your house into an act of urban poetry. The House of the Swallows was the name you gave to this composition made of over 2,000 ceramic tiles, each different from the next, depicting a flight of freedom and peace. A sky that becomes matter, human and poetic, that makes the street even more like a fable that is there, yet it is not there, in the heart of the metropolis. If you look upward, a bit below the real sky, you will see another earthly sky. It is the dream of the painter for his city, your dream for Milan.